You're listening to TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, along with Mike Wilkening, I am Eric at home sitting in for Hub Arkish. It's my distinct pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we bring you the news, scoops, and rumors around the NFL.
We have an in-depth look at some impact rookies, plus training camp previews of the AFC and NFC South.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I'm Eric at home, taking over the captain's chair for this week's show. Hub Arkish, the editor and publisher of Pro Football Weekly, is getting a well-deserved break from the show, but he'll be back as we get closer to the fast-approaching NFL season. And I am pleased to be joined by fellow senior editor Mike Wilkening as we kind of transition a little bit from the NBA now that the king, LeBron James, has put on his big show and made a decision he's going to be with the Miami Heat. But we're going to turn our focus to the NFL and specifically the AFC North. Mike, that's your division. There's obviously been, even in this slow time, a lot of news going on right now. Tell us, update us on the situation of Sean Rogers. He was charged with carrying a concealed weapon at the airport there in Cleveland back in April, but the charges could be dropped. Can you just talk about what the stipulations of that case might be?
Right, Eric. The charges will be dropped if he complies with the conditions of a diversion program, according to reports. And, you know, basically it's going to involve Rogers complying with a 10-hour weapons course, some community service. The big question everyone has after that is whether or not Sean Rogers will be disciplined under the NFL's personal conduct policy. Now, the Cleveland Plain Dealer reported that the NFL spokesman Greg Elwood said that the league is reviewing Rogers' sort of case, and whether or not he'll be suspended or not or disciplined remains to be seen. If he misses any time, it would be a major loss to the defense. Now, Sean Rogers could play a little bit more end this year with Atiba Rubin, who played a little nose tackle last year in Rogers' place when he missed the last five games of last year and did a very nice job. But nonetheless, Rogers is the best defensive lineman they have, one of the better linemen playing a 3-4 front in the league. And if he misses any time, it certainly will have a very negative effect on that defense.
Well, Mike, you don't even have to go very far. All you have to do is look up the road in Pittsburgh within the division to see that, you know, Roger Goodell has a history of disciplining players even when they're not convicted of crimes, or even when the legal system says that the players can get off with community service or by paying a fine. So is there a real good shot, do you think, that he's going to be missing games? Because like you said, Rodgers is kind of the centerpiece of this defense that, you know, let's face it, Eric Mangini probably has a year to prove himself. Without Rodgers, that's a big loss.
I don't think it wouldn't surprise me if he missed a little bit of time. And, you know, again, this is a defense to me, Eric, that I think it's going to be better than it was last year. If you look behind the numbers, they got a good pass rush. I thought Rob Ryan did a real nice job really towards the end of last year with this group. They're better at linebacker. They're certainly deeper in the secondary. And I think at the defensive line, they're good, but, you know, they're at their best when Rodgers is there. And again, any absence at all would really hurt them.
Yeah, that would put a lot of stress on that secondary. Obviously, the rookie Joe Hayden, the number 7 pick in the draft. You know, they brought in Sheldon Brown from Philadelphia. TJ Ward, the second rounder, vying for that safety job. So a lot of stress there. Let's move on to the Steelers now. We just mentioned him briefly a second ago. Mike Tomlin got in a 3-year contract extension reported by the local papers there. Entering his fourth year as the head coach, signed through 2014. Obviously, great news for the Steelers. Was there a little bit of contention in these negotiations? There were some reports that maybe things weren't going as well. And if so, how did it get cleared up?
Well, I think there was some speculation that maybe his future in Pittsburgh might be a little bit up in the air, but I think it was just that, speculation. If you look back at the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're very loyal to their coaches. Certainly Chuck Knoll's long tenure there. You know, Bill Cowher, you know, that certainly missing the playoffs for a number of years and still getting contract extensions. And, you know, this is a team that typically empowers its coaches, gives them contracts, you know, with about 2 years left on their deals. Mike Tomlin's no different. His resume to this point has been sparkling with the Super Bowl win the second year. No, they missed the playoffs last year, and this has been a tough offseason, but I don't think you could really find anybody that wouldn't say Tomlin isn't one of the bright young coaches in the league, and I think he's going to be the coach there for many, many years to come.
How much would you say are expectations sort of kept to a minimum, given the fact that Ben Roethlisberger likely is going to miss either 4 or 6 games? The suspension stands at 6 right now until Commissioner Goodell rules and possibly reduces that suspension. A lot of people feel he will. But as far as, you know, the expectations, this kind of take the pressure off him a little bit. The head coach now has an extension. They don't know how long they're going to have their starting quarterback for. Just talk briefly about how you see Tomlin's going to have to approach this season.
Well, to me, I think they're in a very interesting situation, Eric, because you're right about expectations. I think people are penciling in the Ravens as maybe the favorite in that division. The Bengals are, coming off winning that division, and I think maybe improved. So where do the Steelers fit in, and how do they react after such a tough offseason? I think that's what everybody wants to watch, but I think they're a dangerous team nonetheless, and I know Roethlisberger will miss the minimum of the 4 games, but I think Byron Leftwich can be a perfectly fine fill-in. The defense is still good to very good, I think can get by for a few games without Roethlisberger, and I just tend to think this is a team. You look at their opening schedule, they have an opportunity, I think, to get off to a good start, and I think they have an opportunity to be dangerous. It comes down to focus and all of those things. I think they've had enough time to deal with the distractions of Roethlisberger, some of the other things that have gone on in the offseason. Nonetheless, you can't overlook Pittsburgh right now. I think they've got a chance here to still make some noise in that division.
All right, guys, we need to take a quick commercial break. We'll come out and talk about some of the NFL's most notable rookies as we head towards training camp. Back with more NFL, and because it's July and training camp is only a couple weeks away, we now turn our attention to the rookies, more specifically the first round picks around the NFL. Currently, as of this taping late Thursday afternoon, none had signed, and a lot of second rounders also unsigned. For more on this, we bring in executive editor Dan Arkish. Now, Dan, you wrote a piece for ProFootballWeekly.com this week, kind of an interesting look at this year's rookie class, how many guys might make an instant impact as starters this year, also on the special teams unit. What did you find out?
Well, Eric, I went through and, counting punters and return specialists, I came up after a bit of number crunching with 37 rookies projected to begin the season as starters, and no less than 20 of them were first rounders, which makes a lot of sense. So, that's a pretty huge influx of new blood, but obviously... there's the situation with all these guys signing, and it's slow going so far, and we suspect it's probably going to stay that way.
Well, Dan, when you talk rookies, we start at the top of the list, and we look at Sam Bradford in St. Louis. What do you expect with regards to negotiations between him and St. Louis, and what do you think his impact will be on this offense this season?
Well, I think, Mike, the one thing that might get the ball rolling is the talks that actually will have begun on Friday. They're finally starting to talk. I think that a signing could come relatively quickly, and then there could be some sort of a domino effect. Now, I mean, as far as his impact, the Rams are saying initially that A.J. Feely is going to start and that they're going to really ease Bradford into the picture. But everybody that I've talked to kind of suspects that the undisputed face of the franchise, there's no way he's going to be sitting on the bench in week one. And by the end of the preseason, he's going to be that starter. What kind of an impact he makes, there's a lot of things involved in that. The Rams offense was flat out terrible last year. It managed only 16 touchdowns. I think they're going to try and open things up again, this season. And, Bradford has all the tools, tremendous intangibles, and we'll just have to kind of wait and see.
Dan, one of the other teams you cover for us in the NFC West, so the Seattle Seahawks. And, I think it's probably, certainly in terms of physical space, the largest shoes anybody has to fill is Walter Jones, not only one of the largest players in the NFL, one of the best, 9-time Pro Bowler. Russell Okung, the number 6 pick in the draft. I know the Seahawks were tickled to still see him there. They were talking he was going to be gone before that pick. How has he stepped in so far? I mean, are they just pretty much penciling him in at left tackle as a no-doubt 16-game starter, provided he's healthy?
I think that's the plan, Eric. You know, the new offensive line coach, Alex Gibbs, who's considered the guru of zone blocking, he certainly is impressed with Okung. And, you know, he has rare size. He had a tremendous balance. I think the best thing that they like about him, though, is that he's really committed. He loves the game. And I think what's going to help him a lot is a free agent addition, that kind of an under-the-radar guy that they brought in, Ben Hamilton, who used to play for Gibbs in Denver. He's going to play left guard, and I think he's going to offer valuable guidance to Okung at, you know, on the field.
By that same token, Dan, you look at the case of the Seahawks' other first-round pick, Earl Thomas, and he's got a very good mentor, it looks like, in Lawyer Malloy. And you look at Earl Thomas's numbers at Texas, he certainly was a playmaker, a guy that forced a lot of turnovers. How productive do you think he can be from the get-go in that defense?
Well, I think they really like him, and they've really been impressed what he was doing in the early spring practice sessions. You know, he's got excellent instincts and athleticism, and you're right, Mike, when you say that Lawyer Malloy, you know, who's been at it for 15 years, is going to help him on the field. So I think that the Seahawks are looking for immediate impacts, maybe more than any other team, from, you know, their first-round picks on both sides of the ball.
All right, well, we've got to take another commercial break. We're going to ask Dan to hang on in the studio with us to talk a little bit more about the NFC West. We'll be back with the NFL Way We Hear It in just a moment. We continue on with the Way We Hear, going around the league, and we welcome back Executive Editor Dan Arkish. Dan, we were talking about the NFC West before we let you go in the last segment. Obviously, the San Francisco 49ers fortifying their offensive line with their first two picks. But tell us a little bit about, and we were talking rookies also as far as immediate impact, tell us a little bit about their well-known second-round pick, Taylor Mays. Obviously, he had a decorated career at USC, was one of the best-known players coming into the draft, but fell to the 50th pick with some suspect workouts, some instinct questions. What have the Niners seen from him so far, and can he get into that starting mix at all?
Well, Eric, unlike Anthony Davis and Mike Iupati, it's very unlikely that Taylor Mays will be a starter right away. I mean, physically, he's just got all the skills. He's extremely fast. He's got great size. The problem with Taylor is on the mental end of things. He really needs to get a better grip on the Niners defense, learn all the angles. And the way that I've been hearing it is that that could be a little challenging. You know, he's been real tentative in spite of his great athletic skills. So I would have to say that he is a work in progress. He's definitely going to get on the field in certain packages. I think what they'd really like to do with him is to get him involved in special teams, because that's an area that the Niners really want to improve on, and I think they're going to put some real key players, some starters, into the mix on special teams to make them better in that area. What the problem might be with Mays is that he might just not have that special kind of special teams mentality that you need. So we'll just have to see what happens with him.
Dan, one of your other teams, the Chicago Bears, drafted BYU running back Harvey Unga in round 7 of the supplemental draft on Thursday. Where does he fit in the Bears running back rotation?
Well, it's an interesting pick. I think that he very well could end up being, you know, the starting fullback. The guys that they had on the roster, Wilkie, filling that role were Eddie Williams and Will Taufo. And, you know, neither of them, you know, will knock your socks off. I don't know a lot about Unga, except, you know, he's a powerful guy, and he could come in real handy, you know, in short yardage situations. Matt Forte and Chester Taylor aren't necessarily geared along those lines. So I think he could make a real serious run at that fullback job. The other thing, though, that comes into play is the Mike Martz offense, which doesn't normally, you know, use a fullback. And plus, he's also talking about using Brandon Manumaliuna as an H-back. And so it just kind of remains to be seen exactly how Unga fits into things. But I think he's going to be, you know, a fullback.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan. We're going to bring in another Dan and a much easier name to pronounce than Will Taufo or Harvey Unga or Manu Malayuna, and that's Dan Barr, our associate editor. And Dan covers a number of teams for us, but he was sort of on quarterback duty this week. I understand you got to talk to both Brady Quinn and Troy Smith at one of their football camps. We'll start with Quinn. Obviously, he's in a very interesting situation in Denver. Everybody knows about Tim Tebow going there, sort of the future of the franchise. And then on the other end, you've got the immediate starter who's expected to be Kyle Orton. Quinn's somewhere in the middle, and how does he feel about that? They traded for him in the offseason. They obviously wanted a little experience going into the draft, feeling better about that position. But how did you gauge from Quinn about where he is with the team right now?
Well, I'm sure Quinn, a guy who's very successful in college and used to being on the field at all times, is not exactly enthused about what things are shaping up to be in Denver. He's going to enter training camp as a clear backup to Kyle Orton, and it's up to him to beat him out for the job. And Kyle Orton has the benefit of being in Josh McDaniels' offense for a full year. Brady Quinn is going to be at a disadvantage because of that, and he hasn't really shown that he's capable of being a reliable, quality starting quarterback in this league yet. So while Tim Tebow is clearly the future in Denver, assuming McDaniels can really coach him up, Quinn's going to have a tough time finding the field here anytime in the near future, barring some kind of collapse by Kyle Orton.
Dan, as mentioned, you also talked to Troy Smith recently. Fill us in on what he said.
Well, there's been some rumors out there about Troy Smith and whether he'll be an option for the Eagles if Michael Vick does end up getting released. So I wanted to gauge how he's feeling about that situation, and he admitted he'd heard a little bit about it. But he's really going into training camp thinking he's going to be a member of the Ravens. And while he understands that Joe Flacco is clearly the starter there, he thinks he's very capable of leading that offense. And, you know, he said it'll happen when it's supposed to, and he's optimistic. So Troy Smith thinks he's ready to be a starting quarterback somewhere, and he may not get the chance in Philadelphia if Michael Vick is not released, and it's not looking that way right now. So there's most likely going to be heading into camp as a clear backup, and maybe he'll be shopped in Baltimore now that they have Mark Bolger in the fold as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the chance of him starting in Baltimore became very thin. Obviously, Flacco, the future of the franchise, and the present for that matter. Mark Bolger, a very interesting signing by that team. And I can tell you, fellas, with this, I've talked to people in Philadelphia. Vic isn't going anywhere right now. Unless some new facts get unearthed in this case, I don't see him being released or traded or let go in any form. The only other quarterback on that roster, Mike Kafka, a fourth-round pick, who definitely is not ready to play a guy for the future behind Kevin Kolb. So thank you very much, Dan. Great work as always. We're going to ask you to hang on as we take another quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll do our training camp preview for the NFC South, home of the Super Bowl champion Saints. Stay with us. All right, everyone, we're doing some training camp previews on Pro Football Weekly, and we're happy to welcome back Dan Parr from the last segment, sitting in the newsroom. Dan also covers the NFC South for us, and let's start right there at the top. The Saints were the NFL's darlings last season. They shocked the world. But I think, like any champions, they face a pretty tough road back. I mean, what would you say would be the biggest obstacles they'll face right away in camp as they try to repeat as champions?
Well, I think that for the Saints, a problem that they had most of last season was stopping the run. And they weren't able to go out and really address that need a whole lot in free agency because of the uncapped year and the rules it placed on the final eight teams. The Saints weren't really able to go out and pursue a lot of impact free agents. They did get a couple of new guys, new faces on defense. You have Alex Brown, who's known as a run stopper, defensive end. Jimmy Wilkerson from the Bucks had a nice season last year. Clint Ingram, a linebacker, could be replacing Scott Fujita at strong side on the strong side. So they did make some changes that they hope will make a difference. But I think watching how that Saints run defense plays will be something interesting. I'm not sure it's going to be good enough for them to make another run. I think that's really an issue for them.
Well, Dan, a lot of people have pegged the Atlanta Falcons as the most likely team to challenge the Saints, if indeed the Saints do falter. But I think the big question in Atlanta is the defense, which was 21st last year. They drafted linebacker Sean Weatherspoon in round one. How good can this defense be?
That's a good question. I think that there's clearly improvement when you plug in Dante Robinson as the number one corner there. Sean Weatherspoon is a very athletic guy who can make an impact right off the bat. It's not clear what his role will be, though. We're not sure whether he's going to be on the weak side or the strong side and just what situations he'll be on the field. This defense should be better. Whether it's dramatically improved, I'm a little skeptical that that'll be the case. But I think that certainly they made some moves to make a difference. And I think pass rush, whether they can improve that part of the game, will make a big difference. So they don't have a real proven pass rusher to play against. John Abraham, and he didn't have his best season last year. Croy Bierman and Lawrence Sidberry are going to be a couple guys that they think are going to develop into good pass rushers for them opposite Abraham. If those guys come in and are able to get some pressure, make some sacks, I think that this defense will be plenty good.
And I think, Dan, everybody expects Matt Ryan to take a big jump in year three. Not the greatest season last year following up an excellent rookie campaign, but that's certainly what the expectations are in Atlanta. When you shift to Carolina, obviously quarterback comes into play because they've got a real interesting situation. They've got Matt Moore, who was 6-2 as a starter, replacing Jake Delhomme down the stretch last year. Also had a quick stint in 2007, which he played pretty well. But you've also got Jimmy Clausen, who slid a little further than people expected on draft day. Number 48 pick. The Panthers kind of fell into their lap a little bit. They certainly weren't expecting him to be there. Now everyone's sort of saying, not if, but when. When is Clausen going to take over? We'll start with that. How do you see this thing coming down? Is it going to be a training camp battle? Is Moore the unquestioned starter? If so, when would Clausen first get that crack to get in the starting lineup?
I think that's really up to Matt Moore. I think if Matt Moore comes in and has a very good camp, picks up where he left off last season, I don't think there's any doubt he'll be starting in week one. And in terms of how long he'll be the starter, that depends on his play. I think that Matt Moore really showed the Panthers a lot in that stretch last season. That season that was not going very well, really, until he came in and took over and did a better job of taking care of the ball than Jake Delhomme had done. He's got a great running game behind him, very good offensive line in front of him. So he's got the tools, and they came out and added a couple young receivers for him in the draft. So it's an offense that certainly has potential to be very solid, and I think as long as he goes out and takes care of the ball, I don't see why Clausen's going to leapfrog him. If the Panthers are competitive, if they're winning games, they're not going to make a quarterback change, and I do believe Matt Moore will be starting in week one.
We finished with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and to me, it's a very young and intriguing defense, one that went to maybe a little bit more of the cover two. Raheem Morris is taking a bigger role in the defense late last season. Talk about those top two picks, Gerald McCoy and Brian Price, in kind of how this young defense, how you think it will come together.
They're putting a lot of faith in those two guys. Those guys could start right off the bat, McCoy and Price. McCoy's going to be at the three technique. Price will be playing nose tackle. Price will be at least on passing situations. Again, pass rush is going to be key for this team. The cover two, they're not going to do a lot of blitzing, so they're relying on the front four to get pressure. And if you look at their personnel defensive end, it doesn't really inspire a lot of hope. So they're really thinking McCoy and Price, penetrating from the inside, are going to be able to clear things out for those guys coming off the edge. And if that's the case, then maybe this defense surprises us. But I think it's still a little bit ways away from being back at the point it was a few years ago as a dominant group.
Well, I think you also have to look at quarterback there. I mean, obviously we don't want to be pro quarterback weekly, but Josh Freeman faces a lot in year two. He's a rookie with a lot of promise, was a rookie with a lot of promise last year, showed some good signs, but I think if that running game and that defense don't help him out, it's going to be a tough uphill battle. We're going to take another quick commercial break, and there's more NFL talk just around the corner as we closely examine the other South Division, the AFC South. All right, guys, welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We're taking a look at some of the divisions around the NFL. I'm Eric Edholm in the studio along with senior editor Mike Wilkening. And we're pleased to bring in associate editor Arthur Arkish, who covers now the Colts and Jaguars for PFW. Arthur, I started the last segment, we looked at the NFC South, talking about the Saints and what they needed to do to repeat as champions. So I'll kind of turn the question on its head a little bit with the Colts and ask you if you think this team is going to have that proverbial Super Bowl hangover as they head back to their old home of Anderson, Indiana. I mean, is there any concern that, they sort of may have missed their window of opportunity last year with that loss?
I don't think that's a real concern. They have most of their key components returning this year. Of course, they've got Peyton Manning, and when you've got Manning, you're in pretty good shape. They've also got several proven players coming back from injury that should give them a substantial boost. Now, really, the real turnover that's worth noting for the Colts is actually in the coaching department. Longtime offensive coordinator Tom Moore has stepped aside. He's now going to be the senior offensive assistant. and in his place will be Clyde Christensen, the former wide receivers coach. Also, Howard Mudd, who was the offensive line coach forever, has retired, and he will be replaced by Pete Metzlazar. So there is some discussion about maybe some slight tweaks to the offense, but for the most part, things should be pretty much the same.
Well, Arthur, we move now to the Jaguars, and interestingly enough, they're a team that seemingly year in, year out, they always play the Colts tough. Two narrow losses last year, but obviously missed the playoffs, were last in the division. And if this team is to break through, because you look at both sides of the ball, and they've got some talent, what has to happen for this team to sort of get up to that playoff level?
Well, I think the key to the Jaguars is going to be improving in the trenches on both sides of the ball, mainly on offense. First of all, David Garrard just got killed last year. He was hit more than any quarterback in the league, and there's definitely going to be some changes on the interior of the offensive line, so they're going to really need some more stability there to help Garrard. And then, of course, turning to the defense, they also had some serious issues getting to the quarterback, so they went ahead and really revamped the defensive line. They brought in Aaron Kampman as a free agent and spent their first four draft picks on defensive linemen, and they're really counting on those guys to come in and kind of give a new look to the defense. And if those things can happen, they could be in good shape. Now, of course, they're playing in a tough division, and they do have a tough schedule, so it's going to be an uphill battle, but it all starts in the trenches for the Jaguars.
Okay, thank you very much, Arthur. We're going to let you go now and stay here in studio with Mike, who covers the other half of the division for us, Texans and Titans. And Mike, my first question is with the Texans. I mean, they finished strong last season, 9-7 record, a lot of smiles on a lot of faces down there, nice win over the Patriots at the end of the season. And everybody seems to be saying this is kind of the year where they finally get into the playoffs for the first time in franchise histories. What say you about the obstacles they face as facing a real tough schedule this year?
The obvious obstacle early is the fact that Brian Cushing is going to miss the first four games. And Brian Cushing was such a key part of that defense. And they play Indianapolis in the opener, Dallas in week three, you know, Washington and Oakland. All of those teams have good tight ends. Certainly that could cause some problems. I think the defense showed a lot of improvement last year. I think it's going to have to be at its ultimate highest level, I think, here to get through without Cushing those first four games, to keep the team sort of in the mix. Certainly, this is a team that has been knocking on the door of the playoffs the last several years. They have a very good offense. I think it's going to their ability to compete for a playoff spot, I think, is going to come down to this. I think they've got to beat Indianapolis at least once. I think defensively they got to continue sustaining that improvement they made last year. And offensively, they've got to find a way to run the ball more consistently. They struggled in that area last year. They've got Steve Slayton. They've got Arian Foster and Ben Tate vying for that running back job. Somebody's got to emerge as a solid running back, I think, for that offense to reach its full potential.
And Mike, you look at this division, I think, you know, it's funny, the team that maybe people don't think of in that contender category are the Tennessee Titans. You know, they're a year removed from a 13-win season. They finished extremely strong down the stretch last year. Chris Johnson had one of the epic seasons for the ages. You know, Vince Young started to show signs that, you know, maybe he can be that mature starter. Again, we'll sort of use the same question. What are some of the potential pitfalls with them? We know Johnson is sort of threatening holdout, talking about his contract unhappiness. What are some of the things that might hold a very well-coached team with Jeff Fisher back from making the playoffs?
Well, I think the big issue with this team, Eric, is the defense. Now, they were 28th in defense last year, 31st against the pass, and they clearly have to improve in that area. There's a big opening at the corner position opposite of Cortland Finnegan. They don't have a clear-cut starter at this point. They've got to get some stability there. Michael Griffin, who struggled a little bit last year, I think has got to go get back to that Pro Bowl level that he was at 2 years ago. And defensive line-wise, this is a team that missed – you know, Albert Haynesworth last year. And I think that, you know, they're going to need to get something out of the rookie Derek Morgan at defensive end. I think as a whole, that group is going to have to play collectively well, you know, for this defense to sort of take a step forward. But I look primarily at the defense as the area that's got to take a step forward. We look at the offense and we know they can run the ball. We know Young's limitations somewhat as a passer, but he's better than he was. And this is a team that can stretch the field a little bit vertically because of that running game. You can get Kenny Britt open deep, Nate Washington, guys like that. I think they're going to be able to move the ball. I think it comes down to whether or not they can stop people enough like they did 2-3 years ago. That's when those teams were making the playoffs.
Very interesting division indeed. So we're going to talk Buffalo Bills next with the voice of the Bills, John Murphy. It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly. Eric Edholm and Mike Wilkening here in studio for Pro Football Weekly. And as training camp approaches, just a few weeks away for some teams, we're thrilled to bring in the play-by-play voice for the radio for the Buffalo Bills, John Murphy. John, thanks very much for taking out the time to chat with us this week. And I guess I want to start with the obvious place with the Bills, and that's quarterback. I mean, everyone's sort of looking at this battle, not sure what to make of it. Trent Edwards, Ryan Fitzpatrick have starting experience. You've got Brian Brohm, sort of the unknown former second-round pick. Levi Brown, seventh-rounder, probably not in the mix to start. I know head coach Shan Gailey has said he has sort of a pecking order in mind, but hasn't really revealed that to the rest of the world. How do you handicap this race heading into camp, and what does the eventual starter need to show most to win this job?
Good question, the second part, but so let me handle the first.
Okay.
I think it's going to be Trent Edwards, at least on the pecking order, number one on the pecking order when they go to camp in a couple of weeks. And it's, you know, it's a difficult choice because Trent has not done much in the last year and a half to distinguish himself or to establish his grip on that job, and he has been a starter for almost a couple of years now. But I just think when it comes to, you know, the physical skills, the way he applies himself to the work, his coachability, I think Trent Edwards is probably the best option for the Bills. But he certainly in no way has a lock on the job. I think, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick got about 7 or 8 starts last season and showed that he can be a capable quarterback in the NFL. He's considerably older than the rest of the group, and that probably doesn't make him the popular choice for that job. Brian Brohm is sort of the unknown factor, you know, a guy who got one start last year late in the season in a game at Atlanta and, you know, didn't really show too much, but very difficult position that he was thrust into with the team kind of, you know, kind of wheezing and huffing to the finish line at the end of last season. And then there's a rookie that they drafted who, you know, I don't think will be a factor at all, Levi Brown. So I do think it's Trent Edwards by default. I think when they go to camp, he'll be, you know, get most of the snaps and be the guy at the top of the pecking order. And then the second part of your question, what does he need to do? Well, he needs to produce. You know, Trent has some good physical skills, a former third round pick. He's got a good quick release. He's mobile enough. He's got, I think, a strong enough arm, not a particularly strong arm, but he really does have to perform at a much higher level than he has the last couple of years. And in my mind, he's got to be ready to fire the ball into those tight windows that you see in the NFL. I think he's shown a reluctance to take chances. He, to me, seems you know, desperately afraid to throw an interception, to turn the ball over, so he's reluctant to pull the trigger many times, and that winds up with even worse outcomes than maybe it would if he just fired it downfield. I think the coaching staff is probably going to is trying to do a good job to rebuild his confidence, to get him comfortable in the pocket, and to get him to force the ball when he needs to into those tight little windows that he sees. And if he can do that on a fairly consistent basis, I think he'll wind up being the starter for probably most of the season.
John, when people talk about the Bills receivers, certainly Lee Evans is the first guy that jumps to mind. I think thereafter that there are some question marks with regards to who else can step up and be capable targets in this offense. Talk a little bit about the situation at receiver and tight end for the Bills.
Yeah, I think you're right. Lee Evans is the number one. Terrell Owens is gone with his 55 catches and 5 touchdowns, so there's a pretty big hole to plug. James Hardy, a former draft pick, early round draft pick for the Bills a couple of years ago, comes back for his third season. Only played in 2 games last year. He was kind of slow to recover from a pretty badly torn knee ligament and late in the 2008 season, so he didn't get much action last year, only caught 1 pass, but he's got you know, good size, 6'5", 220 pounds, he's got decent enough speed, and I think he is probably the favorite to be the number 2 wide receiver. Not only did they lose Terrell Owens, but they let Josh Reed go too, and I think, you know, that opens up even more possibilities. Roscoe Parrish, I think, a guy who's been a productive special teamer and a pretty good specialty receiver, third down type receiver, I think he has an opportunity to do something in this offense. A draft pick from a couple of years ago, Stevie Johnson from Kentucky, has a chance to contribute in this offense. And, you know, things are wide open. They have a fourth-round pick from Connecticut who'll have a chance to show what he can do in training camp, Marcus Easley. I wouldn't rule out C.J. Spiller as a possible receiving threat there. First-rounder, a running back from Clemson, who I'm sure is going to see some action split out wide. And those, I think, can be the primary targets for whoever the Bills quarterback winds up being.
Well, John, I want to flip it over to the other side of the ball. I mean, obviously, like a number of teams in the NFL, the Bills are going the way of the 3-4 defense. And like most teams who make that transition, the first question you have to ask is, do they have the personnel to fill it? Certainly a number of positions, I think, that come into question. But for me, Aaron Maben might be a key to this defense, and I'm just curious to hear your take on him. I mean, he struggled last season, might be a better fit. I know a lot of 3-4 teams were looking at him coming out of the draft. How do you think his, you know, he's going to handle this transition and maybe take a step forward in year two?
Yeah, well, the door's wide open for Aaron Maben to do something. You know, he came late, extremely late to training camp after, not signing his contract until, deep into preseason. And so, you know, missed some time early. As it turned out, he played in all 16 games. It really wasn't much of a contributor last year. No sacks, just, 18 tackles at the end of the year. But, he does, appear to be a much better fit now in this defense, a 3-4 outside linebacker. And I think he's going to get every opportunity to do what he does best, and that's rush the passer. We saw flashes of it in the offseason workouts and the OTAs and the mini camps. And, this is certainly, I think the Bills are looking for some, you know, a payback for the money and the draft pick they invested in Aaron Maben a year ago.
And no one questions the scouting eye of Buddy Nick, so I think they'll get something from him there. John Murphy does a tremendous job calling games for the Buffalo Bills on the radio. John, we thank you very much for joining us on the show today. We take a quick commercial break to wrap things up on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Mike, we turn our look back to what we looked at earlier in the show, the NFC and AFC South, home of the Colts and Saints. The two divisional champs met in a memorable Super Bowl. So I'm going to ask you this question. The other teams remaining in those divisions, do any of them have a chance to either A, overtake the Saints or Colts in their divisions, or possibly just vie for a wild card spot?
Well, I think, Eric, in looking at the NFC South, I think the Falcons, to me, have a chance to make the playoffs, but I still would think that the Saints, in my estimation, are the clear favorites, the team I think you have to look at in that division as the most likely winner. I think on the AFC South, I like the Texans' chances to vie for a playoff spot. Again, as I said earlier, I think it comes down to their defense and ability to sort of get over the suspension to Brian Cushing that's going to last the first four games of the season.
Yeah, I don't think the Falcons are complete enough on defense. I do expect Matt Ryan to take a big step up. Panthers, intriguing, but maybe not enough. In the AFC South, I just don't think the Texans are ready. You know, the Titans and Jaguars, definitely a second-tier kind of group for both of them, but I still don't think that Texans team is ready. Sorry, Houston, I think you're going to have to wait another year. That's going to do it for us this week on Pro Football Weekly. Randy Myers is our engineer and producer. He always does such a fantastic job for us every week, along with Syndication Network, our home studios. Our thanks to John Murphy, the radio voice of the Buffalo Bills, and, of course, thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you next week, same time, same station, on Pro Football Weekly. We'll